some of the stars through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller. Everybody, welcome back to Rated G Radio. I'm thrilled that you're here tonight because we have got the star and the writer and producer of Old Dogs New Tricks web series, Leon Acord. He is on the show with us tonight. But before we bring Leon on, I like saying that. I'm going to say that five times fast. I want to give you a heads up on what has taken place earlier in the week and then what's happening tomorrow on the Friday Night Dance Party. So if you want to catch up and either follow or download any of the shows under your Apple's podcast series thing, however the cool kids do it, you can do it. Monday, we had Dr. Annie Ulrich. She gave us the November energy update. So if you want to go back and check that out, please do. Tuesday, we had author Ara Gregorian, his romance novel called Game of Love. It's a, and it's a play on words too, because it's about a tennis star who falls in love. It's a spectacular book. I didn't think I was going to like it, and I love the book. Ara was on Tuesday night. Last night, we had Walter Newkirk on talking about his book Memorabilia. Of course, it has to do with the Grey Gardens whole phenomenon, and Walter was a fascinating guest. We also had filmmaker Jill Salvino. She's on talking about her Kickstarter campaign. If you can go support Between the Shades, she's raising money for the next 5 days, and she could use about another 10 grand to complete her project. So please go support indie filmmakers. And then tomorrow on the Friday Night Dance Party, hour number one is always Behind the Music. Remember when VH1 used to actually play music, and they used to, feature, superstars, and they would, talk about all the crazy things that are going on? Well, that's what we do tomorrow night in hour number one, and we're going to feature the jazz stylings of New York-based Project Grand Slam. That's their name, Project Grand Slam. We're going to be playing their music in hour number one. And in hour number two, we're going to be taking your music requests. So get them lined up and sent in early. And I'll give you shout outs and birthdays and all the fun stuff that we do on the Friday dance party. So that's going to be taking place tomorrow. But tonight, as we always say when we bring our guest on, without further ado, it's our superstar VIP guest star of the night. Leon, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Garrett?
I am honored that you are here. I've been watching.
How honored, VIP superstar, my God.
Well, I just call it like I see it, and I've been watching you all day. So I got through seasons one and two of Old Dogs, New Tricks, and then my YouTube, for some reason, wanted to be real glitchy with me today, and it didn't want to play season three. So I'm going to figure out technologically what I missed. But we're coming up on season four. But before all of that gets started, I want to send a big thanks to Bruce Hart for getting us connected, and then Rutanya Alda, who has been on the show recently, and all the other 6 degrees of separation of Kevin Bacon that we've got. So
I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. So tell us about Old Dogs New Tricks. Until you were going to be on the show, it was like Old Dogs New Tricks, and I know Bruce has even told me about it. He's like, I'm on this great web series. I'm like, okay, but I sat down and watched it, and I'm in love with this, and now it's coming to an end.
Thank you. Well, we're going to give you a lot before we end. We're going to come back with another mini movie special, like a 22-minute special, to celebrate marriage equality on the anniversary, the one-year anniversary of the SCOTUS decision, and then roll out 10 episodes of the final season in the fall. So anyway,
it's goosebumps.
I'm sorry?
I got goosebumps when you said that.
God bless you. And, I've finally finished writing, and it's an action-packed season, so I think our fans will like it. It's, for those who haven't seen it, it's about four middle-aged friends living and loving in Boys Town, West Hollywood, California, where, 29 is retirement age. And I don't know, we get compared a lot to Sex and the City and Queer as Folk, but My favorite comparison, I wish I remembered which blog it was, said that we were the Golden Girls meets Dynasty.
You do have that intro that somebody put together. I don't know if it was you or somebody else put together. It's like if this were, like a primetime, network soap opera thing. And I thought, oh, my God, how brilliant is that?
I put that together because I was obsessed, I'm 52, so I was like, in my 20s, all during that whole primetime soap opera.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Dallas Dynasty, Falcon Crest, Knots Landing, you name it.
Yeah. It was the two double D's for me. I wasn't too much into Falcon Crest or the others, but Dallas and Dynasty, you know, got to be home Wednesday and Friday night. Sorry, don't
right.
answer the phone.
Yeah.
And so, we try, you know, the thing with Bruce's character, Nelson Van Eddy, you know, that's kind of my one of my winks to that whole thing is, you know, that he's the cat fights, although they're always kind of fantasy, up to now, anyway.
Up to now, yeah.
But yeah, that's one of the winks. That was a great time in TV, you know.
And so when did, okay, so tell me a little bit about you, because I don't, outside of the fact that I stalk you on Facebook now, I really don't know anything about you.
Oh, gosh, let's see. I'm originally from Indiana, and
okay.
I grew up on, it's hard to believe, my friends just cannot believe it, but I'm actually originally a farm boy, and grew up on two or three different farms. We moved a bit when I was a kid. So, you know, did the plowing of the fields, the combining, I've driven a semi-truck, I actually won some prizes in some, like, horse shows. I mean, they were very, like, we're not talking side saddle English horse shows. We're talking, like, out in the field, you know, rough and ready kind of horse shows.
So how in the world did you go from farm boy to, you know, movie star?
Well, we're still working on that. But,
okay.
No, the thing, my parents, you know, they weren't perfect, but God love them. They sort of had this attitude that whatever I was old enough to take, they would allow, and they sort of just let me watch anything on TV from really as young as I can remember. I mean, TV was like, wow, what's, you know, if it started with Bewitched and I Dream of Jeannie and, you know, all of those shows that we all love, and so even though it was like, you know, on this farm in Indiana where, I mean, it's seemed conservative, now it's much worse now than it was then, but then it seemed, you know, amazingly conservative, and TV was like this window into the world of not only what the world was, but I kind of like got my sense of morals from TV, like from, oh, well, a lead character wouldn't behave like that. You know, I can't do hard drugs because, you know, Mary wouldn't do drugs. You know what I mean?
Right.
So my parents did their job in a roundabout way. So I always longed to, you know, escape the farm. I hated farm life. I mean, so I moved to San Francisco when I was 21, lived there for 20 years, did a lot of theater and independent film.
Now, were you like theater-y or a theater kid back in Indiana then? Or was
I did the high school plays, and I did like two community theater shows, Little Abner and Wait Until Dark. But they're, you know, Indiana. There just wasn't, you know.
I'm not snobbish
about community theater. Acting is acting no matter where you do it, but I just like to do it more often, you know, once every two or three years. So, plus, you know, actually after the second community theater show I did in Indiana, which was Wait Until Dark, and if you've seen the movie, I played the Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. part, where I'm like in the first 5 minutes saying, honey, I'm off on a business trip, and come back at the last 5 minutes and go, huh, what the hell happened? And the character's supposed to be this, like, really stern, gruff ex-Marine who forces his blind wife to just depend on herself and whatever. And the front page review on the Peru, Indiana Tribune said Acord is quietly sympathetic, which is totally not what that character was supposed to be. And I actually, that's when I moved to San Francisco, and I kind of became an ascet. I thought, well, you know, my life is my art form, and I didn't really pursue acting. I took an acting class for about 8 years, but I didn't audition. I just kind of, like, tried to live an interesting life until I actually met my now husband, who was like, I want to see you on stage again. I had made some, you know, made my own kind of independent films. I mean, I even hesitate to call them films. On Super 8 film. That's how old I am.
Oh, my
God. But, yeah, my husband, Lawrence, kind of encouraged me. So, and the acting class that I took for 10 years, she did a show. She's a teacher. Put together an evening of Tennessee Williams one acts. So I did that and just totally got re-bit by the bug. And that was like, what, the mid-90s?
Now, did you and your husband meet up in San Francisco, or did you meet after you'd moved down here to L.A.?
Oh, we met in San Francisco, although ironically, he's a L.A. native who moved to San Francisco for a while, and I was lucky enough to catch him while he was up there. So
No kidding.
Yeah, he's pretty fabulous. Lawrence Whiting is his name.
There we go. Well, props to the honey. Okay, so when did you decide that this is going to be like a series that you wanted to, you know, kind of really commit to? Because this is, you know, it's not like, you know, you're going to go work on somebody else's project and you're done with it in, you know, a couple of weeks or something like this. You're investing a lot of time and blood and sweat and tears.
Yeah, every day. The first thing I think of when I wake up, and the last thing I think of when I go to bed. I've lived in San Francisco for 20 years. I'll try to make this short. I've told this story so many times.
Well, you haven't told it to me, so you can take as long as you want.
No, okay, yeah, that's true. That's right. It's all about who's receiving it.
Yeah.
I worked a lot in San Francisco once I got back into the acting. It was like doing, you know, 3 plays a year and usually almost as many independent films. There was a lot of, like, non-union independent work in San Francisco.
Okay.
But then I became SAG Must Join, which I put off joining for a long time so I could keep doing films there. And it was just kind of a perfect storm of stuff. It was my husband ran an event planning company that between the dot-com bust, the first one way back when, and then 9/11, no one was throwing parties. And I had become a SAG member and suddenly wasn't working any films anymore. Although I was still doing a lot of theater, and we both thought, well, you know, we've talked about it. Let's just do it. So moved down here, found it. I mean, I worked occasionally, but like instead of 3 plays a year, I did maybe 1 play every 3 years. And after it was tough. And it wasn't like I was holding out for lead roles or anything. I was just holding out for, first of all, something substantial and. Just, you
so
know,
what did you do? How did you pay the rent and that type of stuff?
I worked at a law firm the first 5 years I lived here. And God love them. They were I pray I can find something like that again. They were incredibly flexible about auditions. And, in fact, when we made the pilot of Old Dogs and New Tricks, I was actually not even really temping. I was like just kind of coming in occasionally and helping out the main partner. And he saw the pilot and flipped. And he was like calling in secretaries from other firms to watch it, which, considering the content, really could be deemed sexual harassment. I mean,
sure.
We're an R-rated show. But he really got behind it and hooked us up with a lawyer and, you know, and he's, you know, like a straight Southern guy, you know, Big Daddy, I always call him, not to his face, but Big Daddy behind his back.
Big Daddy's listening tonight.
Yeah. But anyway, after about, 6 years in L.A. and not working enough, and then the law firm I was working for closed down after 2008. God, wasn't that a fabulous year? I actually, my niece was getting married back in Indiana, and I just had this idea that, you know, when I grew up in Indiana, I felt like a lot of my creativity sprung from the fact that I was felt stifled and bored and suffocated. And maybe if I went back to where I started, I would either connect back into that or figure out some other way I could be happy as a person without being an actor. So I did that, and thinking I'd be doing journaling and writing, and I just, like, I was there, like, I went for six weeks thinking, you know, just a sabbatical, and on, like, the third night, I just had the idea that, you know, write about what scares you. And I was 47 at the time, feeling like, oh, my God, if you don't do something by 50, you're just going to feel like a total... And of course, I'm there with my dad, who's like the ultimate overachiever. He's a high school dropout, but he managed to become the president of the local UAW, run a huge farm, break horses, ride motorcycle. I mean, he's like the ultimate.
He's done it all.
Yeah, like by the time he was 30, he was doing all that shit. So I was kind of like, okay, well, you know what? Take what scares you and laugh at it. Make it funny. And I just literally one night, like, okay, would it be 3 or 4 characters? 4. Okay, well, who would they be? And I just, like, wrote 4 names and, like, brief character descriptions. And, like, from that moment on, it just, like, went, and, like, for every night for, like, the next really 5 weeks, from, like, about 9 o'clock at night after I had dinner with my parents, who thought I'd gone insane. I'd go up to my room and write until like 3 or 4 in the morning. And it was literally, it was like a fever dream. I was totally obsessed. You know, at the end of the 6 weeks, came back to L.A. with these scripts. And I had done one of the really great experiences I had in L.A. before I went back was I did a lot of USC films thinking that, well, maybe someday one of these kids will be the next Ron Howard and, you know,
sure,
hook up with him now. And one of them, Arvin Batista, I did his grad thesis film. And when I got back with the scripts, I knew that some people on his crew were gay. And it was a great experience and a great film. So I called him up and we met for lunch. And he's like, yeah, well, you know, let me read the scripts. And he read them. And I was stunned when he, like, called me back a couple days later and said, you know, I'd really like to direct this. And he's like this, at the time he was like 26, straight. I was stunned. I'm like, you, really? I mean, please do. So we shot the pilot. And it just kind of, I thought we'd have, you know, 200 or 300 people see it on YouTube, and it really just kind of took off.
It took off.
Yeah.
So how long from the time that you wrote your scripts and you came back to Hollywood, how long did it take for you to start production and then get it to a point where you had the pilot episode filmed and in the can and ready to do something with? And did you know it was going to go to YouTube, or did you have other ideas?
Yeah, I really thought YouTube because I all along I thought, you know, that this kind of material, no network will buy it. Although, you know, while I was in Indiana, I did catch 2 and a Half Men. My dad loves raunchy sitcoms. And I was kind of like, wow, you can get away with a lot now. But I knew that, no, it would have to be cable. And part of my frustration with L.A. is, especially when you first arrive here, it just seems so gigantic and impenetrable. And, you know, I've always felt like if I can go in and just read for a part, I can almost always get the – well, not almost always. If I'm right for the part, I can almost always get it. But to sell a show and to, like, you know, go through the levels of bureaucracy at even a cable network. So all along it was sort of like, you know, let's do it on the web. But that was like September of 2010, and by May of 2011 we were shooting the pilot, and it was online by that July.
Well, and so it went to YouTube, and so it would,
yeah.
You know, because I would think that you're probably one of the pioneers, and correct me, because I mean I'm becoming newer to understanding that, boy, there are web series out here like Old Dogs New Tricks. So I'm like 4 years late to the party, but at that time you must have been kind of like a pioneer of web series, because I don't think anybody else is doing anything like that.
Well, there were a few when I first wrote it. There was I know there's a show called Gotham that was really the only one I watched.
Mm-hmm.
Before I started writing, because I just wanted, it's like, okay, I've heard this thing called web series. What is it? And I did. My parents didn't have internet connection for one thing, which is probably a good thing.
Oh my gosh!
I didn't watch too much. Yeah, that was one of the things that drove me to, you know, I have to make up people to talk to.
Right.
It literally was kind of like that. But it was just boom. It was just so sudden and so fast, and it. When I was first writing the first drafts, I thought I would hire a joke writer, and you know, have them punch it up with jokes and stuff. And you know, people told me
you didn't really need it, though, did you?
Yeah,
no.
that was surprising. But back, you know, so much has changed. When we started, the general unspoken rule was that, you know, web shows, oh, you couldn't do episodes longer than, you know, 2 minutes, and 3 minutes was really kind of, you were being,
well, then you must have been like the total rebel, because you're what, five to seven?
We started out at 5, and just, you know, in the course of the run of our show, Netflix
get longer and longer,
and Orange is the New Black and House of Cards, and it's totally, now people don't have a problem at all with, you know, sitting down for an hour at a computer to watch a show. So that's one of the arguments I've had with Arvin, who's stayed on throughout the whole run of the show as an executive producer, occasional director, and kind of co-parent. I mean, he's been invaluable to the show. I mean, he really, it's as much his baby as mine. But it's just totally changed.
So I have so many. Okay, I need to like split my screen and go like, okay, we're show questions about the series here, and then like behind the scenes questions go there. So as far as like the show goes, because I'll come back to the behind the scenes things, because I'm fascinated by the fact that you've done this, and you've done this for four seasons. But tell us a little bit about the characters, because you know, like you said, you sat down and wrote the names of the characters, you know, and you got one character by the name of Muscles. And so I just like that, you know, pretty much throughout, you know, at least season one and two, everybody, Muscles, what are you doing? Nobody really calls him by his real name. It's, I think that's hysterical. And, but it's so part of the story. It just makes sense. It flows. The whole thing is like, you know, it's like you start the series with episode one, but they're characters that you're like, oh, I know these guys. They're my friends.
And music to my ears, Garrett. God bless you.
Well, I got the check. It cleared, so yeah.
Oh, good. Okay, well, then
yeah, yeah.
I'm hanging.
No, but the characters were very easily relatable, and they really were just like old friends, not like or not unlike when you would see like Queer as Folk, you know, years and years and years ago, you know, you fell into the Michael and you fell into the Brian and you fell into the Justin, you know, characters, and you know, got that. But you had, you know, six seasons of, you know, 20 some odd episodes a season and an hour a piece that, you know, you had to trudge through to get to that point. You've got like 5 minutes to get through, you know, to get your point across, and magically in the first, you know, couple of minutes, you're like, oh, I'm in, I'm good for this. And however long the shows are, I'm going to watch for the long haul. So, you know, how did that come about? Did you know that it was going to be something that was going to click that easily, or was that just luck?
Well, I dream big. Even when I was writing in Indiana and thinking, oh my God, I just, because everything I've acted in, you know, every actor kind of like goes, this is special, this is wonderful, unless it's just a total piece of crap. Can I say shit on your show?
Yeah,
rated G.
Well, the G is for Garrett, okay, and everybody thinks it's
a
G-rated movie. And so
okay.
you can say fuck, you can say anything you want. I tend not to swear, because when I start to swear, it sounds like I have Tourette's. And then people go, he doesn't know any other words except the F word. So I don't
people
swear.
People have come to expect it from me. It's bizarre.
Yeah, okay. Well, so just knock yourself out. It's okay.
It's really first of all, the characters kind of came. I mean, the four of them, I mean, they say write what you know. And I think any writer will say this about his characters. The four... they're really four pieces of me, and at least at different times of my, even Muscles probably. In my 20s, I was very much like Muscles, not physically, unfortunately, but very kind of rigid, like, okay, a prospective boyfriend does this, and if he doesn't do that, then I'm not interested, and I had that kind of mindset. I've been married for a really long time, so Ross has kind of been, you know, the person... who a much more exaggerated version of, you know, the kind of the actor who's kind of the stay-at-home husband who's not acting as much and is frustrated and taking it out on his marriage. Nathan, I'm neurotic like Nathan. We're different in that he's much more thoughtful. I'm much more reactive, but he's sort of like the me who just can't figure out how relationships work. And I'm not going to tell you what I have in common with Brad. Because
well,
but it really
think...
was kind of like, you know, channeling different energies that I had into these characters, you know, tweaking them and, you know, changing them. But one of the things when I was first creating it, you know, I like I said, I was a huge TV junkie. So I always had this kind of sensibility that I didn't want any of the characters to go really too far. I mean, we use bad language and have sexual situations, but I didn't want any character. Well, like one of my rules is, I our sex scenes never go beyond what you would see between a man and a woman doing on a network TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And it's weird because I'm not really I don't care that much if the characters are sympathetic, but. Yeah, I just sort of had this subconscious rule. Like I said, like, you know, how I got my moral system, like, you know, would a lead character do that? Would a lead character, you know, that, no, that would be, if you do drugs, you're a supporting character, you're a guest star, you know, a lead doesn't
right, yeah.
do drugs.
Yeah, lead
Which,
never does, yeah.
The challenge with that actually was Brad, and that's,
right.
Kurt Bonham, who plays Brad, actually is really, we saw a few actors, and a couple of them pretty well known. And they had a tendency of playing Brad just like, in your face, and really playing that kind of the arrogance. And the thing with Kurt is he's so charming, and he gets that, you know, the lines are there. He doesn't really have to, just the fact that someone would dare talk like that, he doesn't have to put any spin on it. He doesn't have to make the character bigger than life or a pirate or whatever. And that's, I think, what makes Brad so charming, is that he's sweet. You love him, even though, you know, he has the most outrageous, obnoxious behavior and says some of the most rude, outrageous things. And that's all to Kurt Bonham's.
Well, I think each of the characters is so hysterical in their own way. And honestly, to have you tell me that they're, you know, different versions of your personality was not the answer I was expecting here, Leon. So I thought, oh, it's like, oh yeah, I've got my friend Muscles, who, you know, I've known him, and he's, you know, he is a trainer at the gym, and, you know, oh, I know these, you know.
So. I've never been inside a gym in my life, so I don't.
Okay.
Well, except to shoot scenes on the show now, but
So how much of the storylines that you tell are autobiographical, or do you really draw on from, like, things that have happened in life, maybe, you know, not to you, but you've seen? Because, again, you know, the tagline of your show, or at least in the show page here, is, does sex after, you know, 50 end, or what is the sex life for gay men as they approach 50, you know?
Yeah. It's hard to say how much is autobiographical. Is that how you say it?
Sure.
Because I tend to take mostly from my own life, but sometimes I'll rob from friends, just little nuggets of, you know, oh, this happened to me, and then I'll sort of like plant it and fertilize it with a lot of fertilizer, to be polite, and it grows into something else, you know, and I have to tailor it to whichever character I'm having it happen to. I'd probably be really embarrassed if I had to sit down with the therapist and go through the show episode by episode. So yeah. That happened, yeah. That sort of happened, only this was different, or that kind of, like, you saw the season one finale. I actually had a brief job in Indianapolis when I was about 19, being an art director for we called them gay rags, who were like those monthly glossy magazines that
gay
bars. What was ours called? Hot Type. And I had to find a model for a florist ad who was willing to pose nude with only like a flower in front of his crotch. And there was a guy in Indianapolis who was notorious for his, he was really kind of like the Samantha Jones of gay Indianapolis back then.
Oh my goodness.
Everybody knew him. He was gorgeous. And I had this little office, basement office, and through friends of a friend of a friend, I got a hold of him, and he came in, and he's like, you know, I'm like, oh, well, you know, the advertiser wants the model to be nude. Do you have a problem with that? It's like, oh, not up at all. And just totally took off his shirt and stripped down to his underwear. And, you know, if I knew then what I knew now, I probably would have taken advantage. But I was just like, oh, okay, yeah, that's great. Okay, yeah, thanks. Okay, But, you know, stuff that seems kind of unbelievable when you see it on a show. But so, yeah, things like that happened to me. So,
here's a question. And at the half-hour mark, we are going to take a quick commercial break, too, because we've got a couple of sponsors that help, you know,
cool,
pay the bills here. So we're going to do that.
We love sponsors.
We love sponsors a bunch. But before we get to that, one thing that I really found interesting in watching these short little just, like, glimpses into these people's lives is that, you know, the comment I guess I will make is that I'll sit and watch a half an hour show, which is really 23 minutes of whatever, you know, that they go up together on network TV or whatever the case may be. And at the end of that, you go, okay, you know, I guess got something out of that. Now, when I watch your episodes, which are like 5 to 7 minutes long, I feel I got just as much, or maybe even a little bit more, just because I really like the richness of the character, or the depth of the topic, or, you know, the situation that was being discussed on that particular day. And I'm not saying that just to, because you're here as a guest, I'm saying it because I was watching this going, well, I sure didn't expect that. I felt good after watching that, or I got something out of it that I really wasn't expecting. Is that, I mean, from watching TV for years and years and years yourself, I mean, how do you figure out, okay, I'm just going to take like the best out of a 30-minute show and put them into my 7 minutes, because that's what we get. It's not like there's any crap that we're, we got to sit through 6 minutes of this because we get, it's going to take us to point B. There's none of that in any of the show that I've seen so far. So I'm really excited when each of the shows come on, because it's like, okay, we're going to get the highlight reel.
And get right to it. Well, one of my rules is I really do believe the old showbiz axiom that leave them wanting more. You know,
you do.
I love it when people tell me, "Oh my God, I was so into it," and then the end credits rolled. But it was a challenge at first because, like I said, I grew up on classic TV, and you know, the 30-minute/22-minute or whatever it is now. It took me a while to kind of even adjust to the idea of writing something 3 minutes, 5 minutes, what? But I found now that's like one of the challenges of it I really enjoy, and I've kind of have rules that sometimes I will break, but like I try to like never show someone entering a room. Like if the point of a scene is for Nathan to say this to Muscles, I will go ahead and cut to them at a, you know, the table about to begin the conversation, or even right in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
There are exceptions.
It just makes sense. Yeah.
If it's important to see someone entering, I mean, oh my God, and I immediately think of a scene you're going to see in season 3 of Nathan walking to an office building and just kind of looking at something on the wall. You're going to be like, ha, ha,
well, okay,
ha,
so now, I get, now it's like, okay, I can't wait until 8 o'clock and I get my YouTube back here. Let's do this. Lynn, I'm gonna stick you on hold. We're going to go to a sponsor called It Matters Radio and hear a little quick 2-minute commercial about their program, which is live on Thursday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. You can always catch it at itmattersradio.com. Here's their commercial, followed by an LT Coffee Company out of Minneapolis, St. Paul. We'll be right back in 2 minutes.
Welcome to our discussion of It Matters Radio. Our guest today is Angus McWilliams.
Hey, laddie, let's get on with this thing. I'm on my way to a birthday party for Nessie.
You're throwing a birthday party for the Loch Ness Monster?
Well, first of all, it's not a monster. And second of all, I'm talking about niece Nessie. She's a wee bit of a lovely lass.
I see. Well, okay. Angus, can you give us your thoughts on It Matters Radio?
Aye, wonderful people. They had me on a while back to talk about my book.
Your what?
My book. I wrote a book about the adventures in Scotland.
Oh, I see. A book.
That's what I just said. What are you, a deaf man?
It Matters Radio focuses on discovering new talent and bringing important indie artists on the air. Monica, Kenneth, and Carrie offer up meaningful conversation on new music, books, and fun topics. It's unlike any other radio program known to man and woman alike.
You can say that again.
Known to man and woman alike.
Just because I said you can say it again doesn't mean you have to say it again.
I'm just doing my best to show everyone that It Matters Radio basically brings variety, fun, and entertainment with a sincere desire to discover new topics and talent.
Why didn't you just say that?
I just did.
Hey, Letty, remind me when I can listen.
It Matters Radio is on every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
You Americans with your different time zones. We only have one time zone in Scotland.
And that would be...
That would be the time to down a pint or two of ale.
It Matters Radio, for the best in conversation, music, books, and entertainment. Join us Thursday evenings at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific. Discover the depth, diversity, meaningfulness, caring, guest-focused, friendly, enjoyable atmosphere of It Matters Radio with Ken, Monica, and Carrie.
Oh, that's a mouthful if I ever heard one.
Yes, and I'm going to go brush my teeth now. It Matters Radio.
When it comes to coffee, freshness is queen. That's why Rainbow Brew believes you should have the freshest coffee, roasted to order in small batches and delivered to your door within a couple days. Whether you're purchasing for a coffee shop, restaurant, or home, Rainbow Brew is your one-stop shop for fair trade and organic coffee. Offering many unique blends, including AM950's own Blue State blend. That's Rainbow Brew, the Queen Bean, a proud sponsor of The Morning Grind. Online at rainbowbrew.com. Brew something good today.
Thanks to our friends at Rainbow Brew. They're a coffee company out of Minneapolis, St. Paul. And when they approached me about doing the show, I said, well, of course, I'd love to have you be a sponsor for the show. And I said, but how do you grow decent coffee beans out of the frozen tundra? And he says, let me send you some. So they sent me some fresh ground coffee. They grind it fresh right there. And I was like, holy cow, this stuff is good. So if you would like some LGBT grown coffee that is really spectacular. Go to rainbowbrew.com. You know, just they've got all kinds of different flavors. But tell them you heard about them on the show. They will do a little happy dance and probably throw in an extra scoop or two just because you mentioned the show. So please do that, and they would love to hear from you. And so that's my little endorsement for Rainbow Brew. Thank you very much. So we have the grand pleasure tonight of having Lynn Acord on the show. He is the writer, producer, and actor of the cast of many of this web series called Old Dog New Tricks. They're beginning season 4, but here's the deal. I want to find out all the behind the scenes stuff, because Leon after the show could say that was the worst experience of my life. I never want to talk to him ever again, but I've got to be until 8 o'clock. I'm going to ask all the questions I can now, because so when you do a web series like this, you know, I'm always impressed that number one, you got it to pilot, okay? But if you got to pilot, did you know you were going to do other episodes for season 1, or was that just like, well, I just got to film the pilot and we'll see what happens?
Well, when I was in Indiana, I'd written probably the first 10 or so, well, actually, no, about the first 15 episodes in one form or another. Originally, the episodes were 15 minutes long. That's one of the things that Arvin did, was come in and was like, no. So we kind of like did a Batman thing, chopped them in half with cliffhangers and stuff.
Sure.
But I'm sorry, what was the question?
You got the pilot filmed, but after that, I mean,
it was like Arvin read the scripts and we're like, well, we'll shoot the first episode, we'll shoot the pilot. And I'd always written it to be sort of more of an introduction to the characters, and we just thought, well, we'll shoot that, see how it goes. And we shot it in 4 days, had a great crew. Most of them have been with the series ever since. God, we're lucky. And we had a screening party the night we loaded it on YouTube, and the response was just amazing. I mean, people loved it. It was far exceeded expectations. And at one point at the party, Lawrence and Arvin and I were standing in a corner like, oh my God, what do we do now? Do we do one episode? Do we do four? Should we just put them together and do it as a movie? I mean, obviously we thought there was something there or we wouldn't have done it. But I mean, it was very heady. People were kind of gaga. It was great.
This is the part that I don't understand, because it seems like everybody in Hollywood is like, I need a dollar for this and I need a dollar for that. Did you just have
we're the
some
same? Multi-band? We're exactly the same.
Well, so how do you do this? And you know, you go from saying I've never done a web series before. Okay, I'm doing episode 1. I've got the pilot done. Wow, people like this. You know, it's not like, well, you know, I just happen to have an extra $50,000 sitting around.
I know,
from,
really.
You know, the rest of season 1, and everybody else is, you know, just happens to be available. How do you make planetary stars align to get the same people back once you realize, okay, hey, we've got some here. You know, let's film some more. And how do you find it?
That was one of the questions when I was writing. It was like, you know, I was all excited, and Lawrence was, you know, as usual, my voice of reason, saying, you know, well, first of all, we're going to pay for it. You're unemployed. So, but fortunately, it was, you know, again, we were lucky enough to sort of ride the crest of this wave called crowdfunding and funded the pilot even on that, just from, you know, friends. And then, and it's funny, we've done it for every season, and every time we've done it, we're like, oh, my God, we can't possibly ask people for more. But then at the end of the season, they're like, oh, my God, you've got to tell us what happens next. And it's like, well,
right.
Would you be like, yeah, we will. And
yeah,
then it's,
yeah.
It's crazy. But, yeah,
okay.
It's mostly – there's been – I mean, we've had two or three blessed angels. God love them. Some of our own money. But, yeah, most of it's been crowdfunded.
And I guess the reason I'm harping on this is because – what you've shot and what I've had the chance to see on YouTube today for the first two seasons looks big budget. I mean, it's not like, okay, here's somebody filmed it with their iPhone and they're, you can see them because they're running down the street. You know, You've got great scenes for like one of the weddings where you have, you know, Greg Louganis is a guest star. You've got great sets. You've got great locations. You know, all of this stuff, you know, comes at a price, you know, and it may be that you've got great locations, but then you've got a crappy cinematographer or you've got a crappy director and yeah. Everything here looks great. Looks like you've spent a ton of money on each of the episodes just to get them to look the way they do.
God bless you. We've spent some money. I mean, we do try to not spend anything that's not, I mean, God love our actors. They work deferred, you know, I mean, the SAG says you can like make any deal you want with actors for new media, but we keep to like the low budget contract, which means every day they work, they will get $100 if the show ever makes a profit.
Gotcha.
God love them. But yeah, I mean, our cinematographer, Kiko, works, I mean, for next to nothing, really, and works his ass off. And they just all, the whole crew seems just really committed to it. And I was like you. I thought when I was writing it, you know, we're going to be shooting this with little handy cams and those little.
Yeah.
My dad was watching the show of something about people who repossess cars, and they use those little video cameras that they like
stick on the
windshield.
You know?
That's what I thought it would look like. And God love Arvin. In addition to being a great director, he's also his career, quote unquote, is like doing animation and opening credits. Like he does the opening credits for the Writers' Room on Sundance Channel. He's got a great visual eye, and our cinematographer Kiko is fabulous. Our directors have all been USC graduates or Chapman University graduates. I've been so blessed. That's why I can't say when people say, "Oh my God, congratulations, you created." It's like, no. I planted a seed. I mean, these other people crafted it and is what it is. God love them. And when I really think about it, I just get verklempt because I never imagined. I mean, it's totally exceeded all my expectations when I first wrote it.
So when you get done with season one, and then, you know, I know you said you did the crowdfunding thing. How long after season one wrapped did you say, well, okay, I think we're going to do season two? And then, you know, once you got all the money put together, because, again, you know, the angels were smiling upon you, was it easy to get the same cast back together, or did you have any scheduling nightmares because, you know, you had people that were doing other projects, or, you know, how did that all come into alignment for you?
We had some scheduling problems. I wouldn't call them nightmares because everybody wanted to come back. God love them. With one exception. But we had to, because our actors are so good, they work a lot. So there was a lot of, you know, free not this day but not that day or that weekend. So Steve Curtis, our line producer, God love him. We call him the general because he's so strategic in figuring out. Like when Greg Louganis guest starred in the wedding episodes. Those scenes not only included the entire cast, but like 50 extras. And when we were in pre-production for season two, there were, I think, two different times that Greg would email saying, "Oh my God, I've been asked to go to Thailand to talk to, you know." And you're not going to argue with that, first of all.
Yeah.
They're doing the show for free, basically. You can't guilt trip them into, "Well, you promised."
You promised. You know,
like,
yeah.
So God love Steve Curtis. Somehow he managed two or three times, like, "Oh, okay, let me move all of this around." I imagine he must have one wall of his house just big magnets or something to figure this stuff out because it would drive me crazy. But yeah, the actors have been. In fact, most of the actors, when I've talked about how I wish we could raise enough money to actually pay the actors, most of the actors have been like, "Just put it into the show. Put it into the show." God love them.
Well, it looks like it. So it's not really been a 4-year process, but it is probably like around once a year you guys say, "Well, let's get the band back together."
Yeah, I would say between the end of a season and it's been about a year gap between seasons. It's one reason we've done little mini movies like WeHo Horror Story, which you're about to watch if you're beginning season 3, which is like a 22-minute Halloween special.
I can't wait.
Oh my God, it was so much. You can't do a gay show and not have a Halloween episode, right?
Right.
But I forgot the question again. I'm just sledded.
Well, so it's just, I think, you know, logistically, just trying to get everybody back, you know, from two and three and four.
That was another reason we did a movie. It's like, okay, well, we can get everybody get together for this one weekend. Okay, well, we'll shoot that then. And then, but again, we're blessed with actors who just really want to do the show. And I don't know what I did. God love them. There was no casting couch. I'm not that good. But they all seem really committed, cast and crew. Like I said,
you've got
crew
very talented people, both behind the scenes and in front of the camera. Yeah, because it's, you know, everybody there was so far that, you know, every episode. Like I said, though, and I don't need to, you know, suck up to you here, Leon. So if I didn't like it, I'd just say, well, that was a nice show. That was adequate. But but each episode just looked so. It's been fun to watch so far. So maybe if we had the director on, I should be asking him this, but from a technology standpoint, has there been anything that has changed from year one to now that has helped how you've done the show?
Well, Arvin has a new GoPro, so he says we can actually, our driving shots, we can actually have moving cars past our car now when we do our our driving scenes. They were always kind of static before. So that's cool. But other than that, I mean, our crew's already cutting edge. I mean, I've already been, you know, I'm old. I started my film career on Super 8 film. To, you know, the first year was sort of like, you can do what?
Right.
It's done already? I mean, there was a lot of that the first year. I can do, really? You can email that?
Wow.
Dropbox.
Yeah,
it was a huge learning curve. I'm still learning because it's constantly, you know, evolving technology.
That's that old dog, new tricks, you know, from a film production standpoint. So what's going to happen in season four that you can tell us about?
What can I tell you about? Well, I can tell you about some things that happen without telling you who they happen to. Maybe
that's fair. You know, 'cause we promised steamy answers here tonight.
Steamy answers. Let's see. There is a we have a new character who's a closeted A-list movie star. Actually, I can tell you the character that's involved. There's going to be a big screen version of Max and Me. And the guy playing the character Ross played on TV is going to be this closeted actor who's going to cause all sorts of grief for Ross.
Oh, goodness.
Brad may actually have a boyfriend.
Finally. Oh, gosh.
Well, on his own terms. We'll see how that
right,
works
out. Right.
And a comeback, actually. Jake, well, you haven't seen season three, so I can't say anything that you won't understand. Nathan continues to just kind of flail about trying to figure out how to have a romantic life and still be successful at work. Britannia will be back, as will Brad, or Bruce Hart as Nelson Vanetti.
Yep.
We're actually going to find out why they hate each other so much. In the very last episode, you're going to find out. That's how it starts after they try to work together and it just becomes impossible. I have to be careful. I don't want to give away too much.
That's okay.
We find out that one of our, one of the characters that we've seen before in the show ends up homeless.
Wow.
So we kind of go there. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's really hard to talk about it too much. Of course, still lots of steamy sex. We're talking to an actual, well, we're talking to a movie star. We've had movie stars before, but we're actually talking to a new, real movie star who seems very interested. I wish I could tell you her name, but I can't because it's all about scheduling because our line producer has the scripts now. He's starting to do the big, you know, magnet on the wall project of who's available when and
oh my! So you haven't filmed it? I thought this was all in the can.
No.
Gosh.
We're just now. Oh well, you're hanging up then.
yeah. Goodbye. I'll talk to you later. Oh my gosh!
But it is all written. It's written, and the team has it. Most of the team, and it's starting to go out to guest stars. A lot of the guest stars have agreed to come back. Well, you haven't seen Mo Gaffney yet. You will in season 3.
Not yet. Yeah, I saw that. That's in the preview for season 3, so that'll be fun to see. So, okay, we've got about 10 minutes left, and I got a couple more questions for you. In the four seasons of stories that you have actually had, you know, made it to the screen, season 4 hasn't been filmed, but it's close enough that we'll call it that it counts. Is there a story that you would have loved to have told about any of the characters that you did not?
Yeah, actually there is. I had to be careful about how I answer this question.
okay.
No, you'll understand why I say that as I explain it. Originally, I mean, the name of the show is Old Dogs and New Tricks. And, oh my God, this is going to be a big spoiler if you just stopped watching at the end of season 2. One of my intentions was to have the show be about Nathan and Damien and the struggles of trying to maintain a relationship when you have this huge, vast age difference. And due to powers out of, you know, due to circumstances beyond my control, the actor who plays Damien decided to move on. And so, you know, that's one story I wish I could have pursued. There was a lot of stuff written that we had to sort of like, okay, file that away. But
so it's kind of like the Dallas episode where Bobby came back and Pam opens up the shower door.
You know, I reserved the right to use that should, you know, season 4 turn out to be a turd. Oh, no, that never really happened. Nathan hit his head.
Yeah, he hit it. So is there a story that did make it to air that you afterwards said, I wish we wouldn't have done it?
Other than my own sex scenes, no. Those are kind of, I don't need to see that. And I don't
so why are you self-conscious about that? I mean, you're the writer of the show. You know, you could have opted to make any of the other characters do that. And
all do it. And I've kind of felt like, you know, I can't ask them to do it if I'm not willing to do it. But I actually, when I'm writing it, I don't even really think about that. I just think, oh, wouldn't it be funny if when Nathan's having sex with that kid, this happens? To write it up, you know, and then show up on the set that day and go, oh, shit, I have to, and it's actually now, it's not even so much the shooting of it, is getting that first rough cut and going, oh, God, I'm not 25 anymore, am I?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God, can the makeup woman do my whole body next time? Maybe that would...
So, why is this story important for you to tell, and why is it important for others to see and hear this?
I have a lot of motives. One of it is just feeling, I mean, there is a lot of representation on TV of gay characters now. I hesitate to use that as a reason, but I still feel like they're either sanitized, you know, the gay characters are sort of like kind of what women had to go through with either, you know, the Madonna or the whore. The gay characters are either sluts and evil, or they're saintly and lovable and funny. And I really wanted to do a show about gay guys in between, who are like gay guys I know, who are flawed, who make mistakes, who, you know, but who are still redeemable and worthwhile and interesting. And so there was that. That was really the main thing. And also just to challenge the age thing that, you know, we don't, I mean, I don't know, straight men, 50 and beyond, can have these, like, 26-year-old wives, and most people don't blink an eye. But gay people, I don't know, it's like they don't want to see gay people over 50 holding hands. Well, they don't want to see gay people 25 holding hands, really. So I guess it's a double whammy. But a lot of it is the age thing, just, you know, saying, hey, we're still here. We still have sex. We still have messy romantic lives and professional complications and, you know.
So you're kind of like, you know, and this is a crazy comparison to make, but you're kind of like Cougar Town for the gays.
You know, congratulate Garrett, God love you. That's one show we have not been compared to yet, and it's actually that's –
Well, you guys drink a little
bit
of wine.
It seems like there's an obvious comparison now. That's brilliant. It's true, yeah. And it's not that they're all preying on young guys, and it's not a show about old leches just trying to, you know, find the hot young things. Sometimes it happens by mistake. it's really about four friends. I've always thought the stronger the four friendships are, mm-hmm. the more outrageous the sex can be, and the more like just totally degrading, you know, some of the relationship missteps can be, because, you know, there is a family there. They're not out there alone. If this is a show just about Nathan, especially dealing with the Damien storyline, and he didn't have those friends to fall back on, oh my God, it wouldn't be a comedy. It'd be
very sad.
Yeah, it'd be so depressing. So I guess that was another thing too, of just showing the strength of found family, and a family is what you make. Really,
I love it. Where can people find out more about Old Dogs and New Tricks? No, this is a leading question. I'm asking you to say the words, because on the show page, I've got a link for the thing on YouTube. I've got a link to your fan page on Facebook. But for anybody who's listening, we're also broadcast across the pond in the United Kingdom on both Chat and Spin Radio and Westar Radio. So I want to say thanks to everybody who's listening overseas. So if they're listening by telephone or, you know, internationally, how do people find out more?
They can go to our website, which is www.odnt.tv. All of our episodes are there. We have actor biographies and links to, like, pretty much every interview and review that the show's had on a great website designed by Scotia Draven. I wanted to give her a plug because she's great.
Got to give her shout-outs.
Oh my God, it's a beautiful website. On Facebook, we're at Old Dogs the Series. On Twitter, we're at ODNT the Series. And me, you can just look for Leon Acord either on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram. It's just Leon Acord with one C. And by the way, thank you. You pronounced my name correctly with no coaching whatsoever.
Well, you're not a Honda Accord. So if you were, if your first name was Honda, I would say, hello, Mr. Accord.
Thank you. One C, Acord.
Acord. There we go. So any last words of wisdom or thoughts about the industry in general that you'd like to share with anybody who is either in it to win it or is thinking about jumping into the pond?
Well, you know, I used to say that every actor should produce his own web series, but now that it seems like every actor is producing his own web series, I would say don't produce your own web series. You know, I really don't – the industry has changed so much just in the 10 years I've been in L.A. Forget about, you know, from when I was a kid deciding to do this in the first place. I would just say tenacity and resilience, and really one of the lessons I've learned from doing the show is just to roll with it. And, you know, when bad things happen, you can spend a lot of time reacting and then deal with it, or you can just deal with it. And it's amazing the energy you save when you decide to just deal with things without, like, screaming and yelling and cursing. And also, yeah, a lot of people are like, oh, well, how can I do a web series? I really think, and they never like my answer, because my answer is that you really have to be so passionate and determined to do it that you just do it, regardless of how much you know about it, because I knew nothing. Thank God I had great contacts like Arvin and you know, other people, actors we met through auditions and all of that. But, and, you know, it's just, you have to have the passion to jump into it, really whether you're ready or not. And you'll find that you'll just attract like-minded people. And just it happens organically so much of the time. So much of this, you know, I wish I could take credit for that. Oh, I planned it that way. But sort of, you know. Oh, well, Arvin knew Matt Ladensack, who was our first-line producer, who was great, who knew this person. And Steve Curtis we found on Craigslist. I mean, and he's turned out to be the general. He's brilliant. I don't know why he's not running a studio. And the fact that these people are willing to work so hard for so little, it's just, well, I don't know. I guess start with, I mean, I hesitate to even say, oh, it's start with a good script, because I don't think I'm all that as a writer. But start with a script that you feel so strongly about that it drives you to just do it. That would be my advice.
There we go. Everybody, it's been Mr. Leon Acord with Old Dogs New Tricks. Check out the web series on YouTube. You can check it out off of their website as well. And look for season 4 in 2016. It will be exciting for sure. And we'll have to have Leon back. So, Leon, you've got an open door. You can come back anytime. We'll talk about whatever you want. But
well, God
I would
bless
love
you.
It.
Maybe drag some of my other dogs with me.
Get them all. We'll get you all barking. That's all. You know,
the whole pack.
It'll be like a wolf pack. That's what we'll
there
do.
There you go.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much. Have a great evening.
Jared.
I saw the post about your husband and the Food Network show thing, so I'm going to go watch that too. So congratulations there.
Oh, cool. Thank you. Lawrence Whiting.
There we go.
Everybody
go check out Lawrence Whiting as well. Thanks, Leon. Have a great night.
Thanks, Garrett. You too. It's been fun.
Thank you very much. Everybody else, we're going to be back tomorrow night on a Friday dance party. We've got jazz group Project Grand Slam out of New York City. We're going to be playing their music live starting at 7 p.m. That's, of course, in hour number one. It is the behind the scenes with Project Grand Slam. And in hour number two, it will be your request. So please make sure to send your request to me here at Rated G Radio or on Facebook as well. Have a great night. Don't drive distracted. I haven't learned to talk yet in the T during this episode too. So don't drive distracted. Thanks to Leon Acord and Old Dogs New Tricks. Great web series. Go check it out tonight. The episodes are so much fun. Thank me later and go be a fan on their website. Okay? Have a good night, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.